Tapping the Keg Daily is live for Friday. It is April 26th. We talk about the Green Bay Packers taking the safe route, and that's okay. Drafting Jordan Morgan, we'll react to that. We'll also talk about the rest of the NFL draft reactions, just a few things that crossed my mind as it relates to the NFC North, as well as the NFC in general. Talk a little bit about the Milwaukee Brewers, their series against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and some quick thoughts as we head into Game 3 tonight for the Milwaukee Bucks. But before we get going, we're on social media, Tapping the Keg on X/Twitter, Tapping the Keg Sports on Instagram, as well as TikTok. Tried a new thing on Instagram where we did the instant reaction, but we did it as a carousel. So go check that out. Go like that. We'd appreciate it. If you are already doing the social thing, make sure you're subscribed to the pod, Apple, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcast. We are there for you, usually 4 days a week. This week we've been 5 days, actually six. We're going to do a pod tomorrow, talk about Bucks-Pacers game 3. We're also going to talk about whatever the Packers do in round 2. So it'll be a loaded show that will probably, I don't know when we'll get it up. So it might not get up till 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. It might be something you're listening to while you're watching the fourth round of the draft. Look, that's okay. That you'll survive, all right? Don't worry about that. So just know, like, I'm not getting paid. So if I was getting paid, I'd be locked in. We'd have a pot up Friday night, and I'd go about my day. I don't know if that'll be the case. Maybe. But I doubt I'll just want to get out. Because, yeah, I won't. Because we have to wait for the Packers to make all their picks. So, yeah, we will still have something for you. So don't worry about it. That's what we're here for. So believe in that. It's a loaded week. And then we'll be back, obviously, on Monday. Talking game 4 for Pacers-Bucks. But today is all about the Green Bay Packers and their draft pick of Jordan Morgan. Let's talk about that. Mitch and I did the pod yesterday. At the very end, we talked about the draft and we talked about how the Green Bay Packers, I pushed back on the idea that the Green Bay Packers needed a tackle. I thought that, you know, the Green Bay Packers have done so well drafting tackles, and that tackles have been a factory position for Green Bay. And I push back on the idea that they have been getting lucky, which is Justin Muscata's thing I think he still works for Acme Packer. I was wrong, right? They went with an offensive lineman. They drafted Jordan Morgan, and they did what everybody thought they would do and took a guy out of Jordan Morgan out of Arizona that basically fits the Packer profile to a T. It wasn't a guy that I saw a lot of people picking for the Green Bay Packers, but when you look at what Jordan Morgan brings to the table, it makes perfect sense. So why did the Packers go with the lineman, not go with defense, not go with what Brian Gutekunst has drafted before in the first round, defensive position? I think he looks at it and says, the offensive tackle is as good of an offensive tackle draft as you will ever see in the last few years in the NFL draft. And because this is such a good tackle draft, you want to get one of the top ones. You want to get one of those guys that is going to be a second contract type player. Daniel Jeremiah, on part of my take, said that 8 to 10 offensive tackles could get second contracts. You know, and he didn't specify which ones, right? But that's how good, how deep the tackle position was. And Green Bay looked at it and said, we got our guy. We got the guy that we really think will most help our team. And that's the route they went. And Morgan fits a lot of things. He has a great Roz score. He could play multiple positions if he needs to. He doesn't have the biggest arms, which bucks the trend of a lot of people, but Green Bay doesn't seem to care that much about arm length. They feel like they can work around the fact that you don't have long arms. He's also a great pass blocker. He is older, could be starting day one for the team. He's not a project like Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, which was a lot of people's sort of pet project, if you will, for the Packers. Green Bay is making sure that this line is absolutely rock solid and making sure that their offensive line is perfectly taken care of And there is no worries. Because Green Bay, while good last year, they were not very deep. Like, that I feel like was a dirty secret about the Packer offensive line. As good as the Packer offensive line was last year, it was not a deep offensive line. It was not an offensive line where you looked at it and you said, oh yeah, there are seven or eight guys that could be starting here. Instead, it was, let's hope nobody gets hurt. And when somebody got hurt, it was like, okay, it's Royce Newman time. And that was a scary thought. Now what Green Bay has is a really interesting profile of dudes if Jordan Morgan's ready to start day one, because it's Jordan Morgan at left tackle, it's Elgton Jenkins at left guard, it's Zach Tom at center potentially, it's Sean Ryan at right guard, it's Rasheed Walker at right tackle, with Josh Myers and Andre Dillon being two really solid backups. So when you look at that, it makes all the sense in the world that the Green Bay Packers would go after the tackle position. I also, again, think that this was a unique year where there were so many good tackles. And a guy like Jordan Morgan in certain drafts might go in the top 15, right? But because it's a draft where you have Joe Walt, you have Fanaga, you have Fatamatu, like you have all these guys who are really talented players, he goes late, right? And he's one, what is he, the sixth offensive lineman drafted in this, in the first round? Like, that's not uncommon. And Green Bay settling, not settling, but Green Bay drafting him over Graham Barton, who goes right after Morgan, I think it really just shows you that they believe that Graham Barton can play tackle. That everybody fell in love with Graham Barton. Everybody at one point was like, oh, Graham Barton's this perfect Packer. He plays all positions. He's very similar to Zach Tom. And they didn't think he could play tackle. And that will be a very interesting case study. It'll be very interesting to look at Graham Barton versus Jordan Morgan for their careers and see where it ends up. Because if Graham Barton's a guard, it's not a bad thing that Tampa took a guard at 26, but at the same time, you don't necessarily draft guards, you know, in the first round. It's usually something you draft in the second round, you draft in the third round. So it is a little bit of a reach for Tampa Bay, but you did get a guy, Barton, who at some point people thought was going to be a top 20 pick, and he fell a little bit to 26. So you can certainly understand that they would like a guy like that and they would go after a guy like that. But I look at it for the Green Bay Packers, and yes, it was the safe pick, but I think it was the right pick. I think it was the pick that makes the most sense. I understand that, you know, you have to now worry about defense. Now defense is the focus. I don't think that you're going to go after a wide receiver at 41. Maybe you do. Again, wide receiver is the deepest draft. Referencing back to what I said about Jeremiah, he said 10 to 12 wide receivers could get second contracts in this group. I think the wide receiver is more of a third round kind of option. But yeah, you are putting your eggs into that. There are still really a lot of talented defensive players available. And I think that's true, because it was an offensive focus first round. And I think there will be a lot of people that have think pieces today, whether it's a first take or a get up, if you will, of like, is this the wave of the future? Are we just going to see offensive players get drafted in the first round and defense becomes obsolete? I don't think I think every draft is different. I think there are going to be drafts where it's a lot of defensive guys and there's only maybe two quarterbacks available, right? Or three quarterbacks available, and teams don't need quarterbacks like they maybe did in this draft, where basically the cupboard's dry. Like, it's Spencer Rattler is the next guy, and is he going to go in the second round, or is he going to go in the third round? Will we have a drought on quarterbacks now? But I think in general, like, you have to understand that, like, they were like, okay, defense is going to be there in round two, because we basically have a lot of options as the ninth pick in the second round. You know, you have Khalid McKenzie still there. You have Cooper DeJean still there. You have There's no safeties drafted. So you have any safety that you want. There are no inside linebackers drafted. You have any inside linebacker that you might want, right? And it's likely that not everybody's getting drafted in the, you know, that is getting drafted the first nine picks are going to be those positions. They're not all going to be defense. I think there's going to be a focus on defense, but I don't think it will be as significant as maybe, you know, what we've seen so far, right? And that will just completely flip, and then it's all defense. The Packers are screwed nine picks in. They're going to have a real opportunity to get somebody. Or if they want to move up and say, all right, we want to get Cooper DeJean, we want to get Kool-Aid McKinstry, and we're going to move up to get him, we have the capital to go do that. They have as much capital as anybody in the draft to really make a move if they feel strongly about it. And we've seen that happen in the draft, you know, early on in the second round. And the Bills have moved back now twice. The Bills, I think, just needed more draft capital. You know, obviously after their team got gutted, they needed to build more draft capital. I feel like there are some interesting thoughts on the Bills, which I want to get to, you know, when we kind of talk about non-Packer things. But Green Bay can move up. And if they do move up, it would not surprise me if they wanted to get one of their guys. And so sometimes it's just you got to wait and see kind of what happens. And Green Bay knew, like, Jordan Morgan wouldn't be there at, what are they drafting, 41? Jordan Morgan's not there. Jordan Morgan would be drafted by somebody because they'd be like, oh, there's a tackle still available. Let's go get him. Everybody's wanting a tackle in the first round. No one's going to let just tackles walk on by. All the tackles were taken, pretty much. Not really, but you get my point. It's not just like, it's not something that just ultimately we're going to give you, you know, okay. I feel like tackles are more of a premium. And again, to the point of what we discussed earlier, like, it's a big time position in this draft. So that's why Green Bay played it safe. And now you look at it and the Zach Tom center story becomes very real. And Zach Tom is likely going to head to center. I feel like that is a real possibility. I don't think Zach Tom can dispute that. I think that's not necessarily, I think, something that's going to make Zach Tom happy. I'm against that decision. But, you know, we'll see. It's a long offseason, right? If Jordan Moore's not ready, maybe Zach Tom still stays at right tackle. Maybe ultimately the plan is to move Tom to center, but it might not be until next year. So we'll just have to sort of see how it all transpires. But they're now in a really good spot with their offensive line. They still probably need another guard and maybe a center if you don't want to put Zach Tom there. But I think they can get a guard later in this draft. And I'm not worried about that at all. But I do think there might need to be a right guard just in case. But they have built the depth there at the offensive line. Other draft thoughts before we do that, we kind of touched on it, but I think with the Green Bay Packers in the second round, I do think, yeah, it's good. Second, third round, I think there's going to be a lot of defensive focus. I think that, yes, maybe an Edgerrin Cooper is a guy they look at. I don't think he'll make it to 58, though. I don't really want to draft him at 48, 41 either. Will they look at, again, McKinstry or DeJean, as we talked about it? You know, those guys could be there at 41, but probably you're going to have to move up to get one of those guys. I think you see it and you're like, okay, this is a first-round talent that's available, you know, at the start of the draft. I wouldn't be surprised if they look at safety. Javon Buller is a guy who I think a lot of people have talked about from Georgia in the third round. I think that would be a very savvy pick for the Packers if they don't end up landing DeJean. They could also look at the wide receiver position, whether it's Keon Coleman, Jermaine Burton's a guy I've talked about a lot, Tez Walker. Like, those are all guys that I could see the Green Bay Packers, you know, making a move for. I think it's too early for running back. Like, I like Marshawn Lloyd out of USC. I kind of see it running back as a day three, round four thing. I don't necessarily want a running back at this point. So I do think that the options are open for Green Bay. I think they can certainly be malleable. I think they can take a swing with like wide receiver because they have the extra picks, and I think they will. But I do imagine they're going to try to get a defender, you know, at 41. I'd be very surprised if they stayed on offense for, you know, the 41st pick. That would be a shock to me. So I would imagine that they go defense. I think those are kind of some of the names that the Packers might look at. I think the draft so far has sort of, and we can kind of get into just overall thoughts, has worked in the favor of defense in day two, just given how much offense was there day one, right? It's the law of large numbers. Like, okay, you have a lot of offense get taken today. That means you're going to get a lot of defense tomorrow. Jai Noone's another guy who I didn't mention, but Jai Noone's another guy who I love at 41. I'd be so a fan of that. And that could certainly be on the table too for Green Bay. I also just think draft-wise, the NFC North got better today. And that's just a fact. Caleb Williams, Rome Aduze. I don't exactly agree with the Bears going all offense on their, you know, first two picks. But I guess understanding that Lantham and Joel both being gone and it going chalk, I can see it more from the Bears' perspective. And, you know, going after Aduze there and giving Aduze, giving Caleb Williams sort of a guy right off the bat. And so now you have this wide receiver core of Aduze, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. You also have Cole Kmet at tight end. You have DeAndre Swift at running back, I'm not a huge fan of. But it is set up very nicely for the Bears. I'm not going to deny that, right? I still want to see it from Chicago. And I think the pressure for Caleb Williams is going to be immense, especially early on. And we will see if the Bears are able to just string it all together. I've never seen a dynamic Bears offense. I'm not trying to be a hater on that. I'm just saying it's not something I'm used to. And then you have the Minnesota Vikings and J.J. McCarthy, and he gets drafted, and they, you know, there are going to be people who believe that J.J. McCarthy is in the best place to succeed. I don't agree with that entirely. I know he has Justin Jefferson. I know he has Jordan Addison. But again, Justin Jefferson, last year of his contract, is he going to really just try to work with this rookie to figure it all out? Is he going to, you know, be, you know, like open to that idea? Or is he going to hold out? And, you know, what's the plan there with JJ versus Sam Darnold? Is Sam Darnold going to start for a little bit and then they're going to go to JJ McCarthy? Giving JJ McCarthy the keys right away feels like giving Ferris Bueller a Corvette. I don't see it right off the bat. I could see it in October. I could maybe see it in November. But Kwesi, the GM for the Minnesota Vikings, you know, trades up for Dallas Turner, and he way overpays to trade up for Dallas Turner. And to me, that shows you a sign of a guy who doesn't know if he'll have a job next year. And so his seat's feeling very hot. And I think that to me is a very interesting thing about the McCarthy deal. It's like they're trying to prove that they kind of made the right decision by not bringing Kirk Cousins back, and that they think that they have the pathway to success. And I'm a little dubious on it. That defense failed down the stretch. And that offense was really never there. It was a musical chairs after Cousins left. And I think Kevin O'Connell is a little overrated as a coach. And while I can understand people being like, oh, the Vikings are, you know, a sleeper team, I don't buy it. I think I'd buy the Bears being a playoff team more than I buy the Vikings. And then the Detroit Lions trading up for Terrion Arnold. I knew the Lions were going to make a move at a corner as, you know, the draft kind of worked its way out. Of course, Detroit moves up to get a corner. I would be very curious if I had a beer with Brian Gutekunst, that is, like, would you have taken Terrion Arnold had it been Arnold versus Jordan Morgan and the Cowboys took Guyton, for example, who they ended up taking, you know, as they traded back. It sucks, right? You know, they add more Alabama guys. They, you know, add a, you know, guy on the outside now to add with Carlton Davis. They get better, you know, at that position. They needed to improve it, and they definitely did. And they were aggressive doing it, and that's not a surprise at all. The Lions have been an aggressive team in the draft, and they've drafted and developed pretty well. And it's going to be that's a hell of a pick by Detroit. And so the NFC North is not going to be easy. It's going to be one of the best conferences in football, or one of the best divisions in football. I think you could certainly see a situation where the Bears, Packers, and Lions are all in the playoffs. I think all are very, very talented and have that ability. But it's, yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath. And so it'll be very interesting to see how it all schedules out, right? You know, are, you know, will we have, you know, not necessarily back-to-back division games? Are we going to see, you know, teams not like, they do this sometimes where it's like, week 12, you play the Lions, and then week 14, you also play the Lions. Like, are we going to space those out? Because those are going to be hard games. And so we'll see how it all nets out. I would imagine Packers-Lions is going to be two primetime games, though. I don't know that for a fact, but when we predict the schedule in May, I'm sure I will have that. I think the schedule will come out like 2 weeks after the draft. That's what it was last year. And I would imagine they kind of stick with that same sort of schedule sort of mentality, if you will. But yeah, the NFC North is going to be a gauntlet. As for other things and that caught my eye, the Falcons, holy shit, pulling a Aaron Rodgers, not telling Kirk Cousins we're going to draft Michael Penix, drafting Michael Penix after you gave Kirk Cousins this massive deal. Kirk Cousins comes out, was like, we're surprised, we're disappointed. You have it. Kirk Cousins hasn't even taken a fucking snap. And you've already sullied the relationship with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins doesn't necessarily seem like a guy that's ready to just accept the heir apparent. Michael Penix is also not like a Drake May where he's 21. He's fucking 24. And as Tom Fornelli pointed out, like, when Kirk Cousins' deal is up, Mike Penix is 28. Like, if I was an Atlanta fan today, I don't know what I'm... how this podcast would be going. I don't think there is a positive spin for that. It's just so brainless. It's like, how did this world dump? Like, how is that the decision? How is that the call to say, we just gave Kirk Cousins a ton of money and now we're going to draft Michael Penix? Like, what is the succession plan there? How does that all work out? If Kirk Cousins was a two-year deal, I could understand that. I could get that a little bit more and say, okay, well, you're basically bridging the gap here. And if Cousins isn't great in year one, we'll just let him go. And then Penix is the future. But still, man, it doesn't make any sense to me. I do think the Buffalo Bills, in defense of them, I don't necessarily like, I'm not saying I hate it, but I saw somebody was like, oh, the Bills handed the Chiefs Xavier Worthy, who's the fastest player who has like, who's kind of will draw Tyreek Hill comparisons. He's not Tyreek Hill, but he'll draw those comparisons, right? And they're like, oh, the Bills gifted the Chiefs that. Look, the Bills need picks, and that's a tough pill to swallow. It's a tough place to be in. But that's what they needed. And so I don't really hate on the Bills for that. Like, I think that's something that you just kind of have to do. I'm trying to think, is there any other things that caught my eye draft-wise? I'm trying to think if there is anything that was also noteworthy. I mean, Jane Daniels, I don't have much for you. Drake May, I don't have much for you. Joe Alt's a massive human being. that is certainly the case. Trying to think if there's anything else that caught my eye. Bo Nix to Oregon, Bo Nix to Denver. Denver was bidding against themselves. It's just like the guy at the auction. Not drafting a skill player for Aaron Rodgers, keeping that tradition alive. Olafoshanu, though, is like, he's a good player, and Aaron was excited about it and, you know, put on a bright face. Let's see here. I like Jared Verse. I just like Jared Verse as a player. Quinyon Mitchell going 22nd to the Eagles. Man, God, that was a fall. Nate Wiggins to the Ravens was interesting because the Ravens are so good corner-wise. Nate Wiggins is a beanpole, but I guess they see something there. And then, you know, two more receivers get picked at the end with Leggett and Pearsall. So very interesting there. But yeah, I mean, good draft so far, and we'll see how it all transpires. All right, let's hit the Milwaukee Brewers, and we'll do a little bit of Bucks, and then we'll ride out. And might be a little shorter. I know I'm kind of intermittently coughing throughout. I'm still battling a cold. I'm working it out with the coughs, and they are brutal. So I'll do my best to edit. But if this is a little shorter, that's probably why. As for the Milwaukee Brewers this week, as we give a grade to every series, we do a series review. I give this a B minus. This was a 2-2 series with the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Brewers were able to get the last two in the series after losing Monday and Tuesday. They finish out the road trip 5-2 overall. The B minus is really just there wasn't a ton of offense for the Brewers for 3 days. You saw it on Thursday, which is great. Pitching wise was decent. There was just a little things they could have done better. But overall, you know, getting a four game split on the road against a division rival, you're always going to take that. And so that's good on the Brewers. In terms of a pitch hitting MVP, I'm going to give it to Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez is not a guy I like. I'm not a big Gary Sanchez fan. I've made that point clear on different podcasts. But credit where credit's due. Gary added the one only run on Tuesday night and pulled the Brewers within a run to give them a chance, you know, in the ninth inning. And then he hits the go-ahead home run to win the game on Thursday. And so you have those two home runs, and you have to at least acknowledge that Gary Sanchez was doing a lot offensively for this Brewers team. He is really just Russell Brandon right now. It's homer, strikeout, or walk. That's all you get from Gary Sanchez. And walks are limited. So it's really just strikeout or homer. I would love to see Gary put a couple more just in play. Like, can we just hit singles every now and again? But if you're going to tell me, and this is how I turn around at Gary Sanchez. If you're going to tell me, okay, Gary Sanchez is going to hit a home run once every 5 days. Like, if that's what it is, if that's our, like, sixth, our rate, right? Once every 5 days, maybe once every 4.5 days, where it's like maybe you'll get a homer Thursday, maybe I'll get a homer Friday, I probably would take that. Like, I don't know if that'd be enough. I'd have to, like, do the math on that. But if Gary's going to hit, you know, a couple home runs a series, I will definitely take that because that just helps Brewers offense. And so that's where I go for our hitting MVP. For our hitting LVP, Willy Adames was awful. Willy Adames nearly struck out every at-bat that he had. I think he was 1 of 11 overall. He was just a complete wreck in this series. And Willy Adames has been great. Like, he's been playing pretty well. And it just, you know, the bottom kind of fell out for him. So now I think, you know, it begs the question, all right, is this Willy Adames regressing? Or is this Willy Adames, you know, just, it was just one bad, you know, one bad night, right? Like, one bad series, which is certainly a lot, right? We all have bad series. We all have bad weeks. You know, it's not your thing. You know, you're not seeing the ball well, but yeah. And Adames still is like 6-for-26. It's not great in his last 7 days. His last 15, he's 16-for-51 and he batted 314. So you need a little more from Adames. The walks have went way down. He only had one walk in his last 26 at-bats after, you know, being, we just talked last week about how he's taken all these walks, and then that just kind of went out the door for him. So I hope that we, you know, see more from Willy Adames here in this, you know, next week, and that he kind of gets his mind right at home. He does fuel. It seems like he does fuel himself on the home crowd. So I'm not exactly worried about Willy Adames per se, but I do hope that it's a little bit better come, you know, this weekend and beyond. Pitching MVP, Brian Hudson. He only pitched, I think, once, but he bridged the gap on Wednesday after Bryce Wilson goes out in the fifth inning. Hudson gives them two innings, was dynamic. I didn't allow anything. He's allowed practically nothing throughout his time with the Brewers. He's been really special so far. Been one of the Brewers' best relievers. Kind of their top middleman at this point is how I think they should be used. He pitched an inning and a two-thirds, pardon me, one strikeout. He has an 0.68 ERA right now. He is just pitching tremendously right now and got the win. Continues to be just such a good find for the Brewers. Was pitching with the Dodgers. Just a 6'8 dude from the left side. Very intimidating stuff. And kind of needs to be implemented more and more as the Brewers go on. Because he's just a shit. He just does really well. And he needs more opportunity to go out there. But he usually pitches two innings. This one, it was only an inning and two thirds. So we'll see if we get more Brian Hudson, less Brian Hudson. But yeah, he's our pitching MVP. And then for our pitching LVP, Freddy Peralta. Look, I love Fred. Fred had a bad start. You know, it's interesting. He did not pitch well in Pittsburgh last year, which I should point out when we, I didn't really preview the series because I was down bad earlier this week. But like, he didn't do well in PNC last year, and it continued tonight. So I don't, this afternoon, I don't know if it's just the way he sees things, if it's just the, you know, whatever the view he has, or just the vibes there, or whatever maybe. But yeah, I pitched terrible. Was walked a bunch of guys. I had five walks. I also had five strikeouts, but I also had five runs allowed. So he needs to be better. You know, it's one start. It's not going to end him at all. You know, he's been really good this season, so I can't be that critical of him. But yeah, it was a disappointing start to say the least. And you just hope that it's just a one bad start. It doesn't, you know, start to snowball on him. And we've seen that in the past with Freddy Peralta. And I'd hate for that to happen after he had such a good start. And the Brewers honestly can't have that, you know, with him sort of being the ace of the staff. All right, before we talk a little bit about the Bucks, the Brewers series this weekend, you have the New York Yankees in town. You'll have a lot of fake Yankee fans in the building. You probably also have a lot of Chicago Yankee fans, aka Italians, in the building this weekend for the games. I would imagine those are going to be packed houses. You have Luis Gill and Colin Ray on Friday night. Colin Ray has been excellent for the Brewers so far this year. He has a 2.08 ERA, but he allows a lot of hits, and you're facing a very talented Yankee team. Luis Gill is a walk machine, so the Brewers, if they're patient, they could potentially get themselves on base. He has 17 walks already in 19 innings. That doesn't exactly feel sustainable with Gill's 2.75 ERA, but we'll certainly see. But yeah, Colin Ray could be up against it, you know, with the tough bats of the Yankees. But I would imagine that's going to be a packed house for the New York Yankees. Oh, they didn't come back today. They lost to the Oakland Athletics in a split, not scoring much. They lost 3-1. But yeah, Luis Gill, definitely a guy who I wouldn't say I'm quaking in my boots for. I am quaking my boots, though, for Carlos Rendon, who will face Joe Ross on Saturday evening. Carlos Rendon's been pitching excellent for the New York Yankees so far this season. Rendon pitching, you know, as a lefty. Well, he is a lefty. But the Brewers have not done well so far. They're in the bottom five on OPS against left-handers, which has been a thing for the Brewers for the last few years. Joe Ross has just been Joe Ross, right? He's you know, struggled here and there, has had some big innings against them. I worry, you know, facing that Yankees, you know, attack, is he going to be able to keep up with that? And definitely with Rendon, I think that to me, I look at as the hardest one of the three to win. And then lastly, you have Tobias Myers, the young kind of kid. He's bounced around. So he's like, he's 25. So I can't call him a journeyman at 25. He's 25. So the 25-year-old going up against the Yankees, going up against Aaron Judge, Stanton, Soto, like that has to be fucking exciting for him. Facing off against Marcus Stroman. Stroman has had a pretty solid start to the season. Stroman's killed the Brewers. He loves pitching at AmFam Field. So that will be a challenge on Sunday. But I do think that's a gettable game. I think the Brewers can get 2 out of 3 from this Yankees team. Yankees have been very good on the road. They're 9-4, just kind of similar to the Brewers where they've had a lot of success. But yeah, the two of the best teams in baseball so far, you know, duking it out. The Yankees right now are 17-9. The Brewers at 16-8. So this will be an excellent matchup to see how both teams do. And a good measuring stick for the Brewers, honestly, because you're facing a very talented team in New York. And can you handle that? And we'll see. That'll be a great test for them. And looking forward to it. It's kind of going to be tucked underneath because you'll have the Packers draft. You have the two Bucks games. And then you also will have this. So it's definitely, you know, unfortunate. Kind of bad timing to have the Yankees in town, honestly. Because I feel like because they're the Yankees, right? Like, that's always going to be a big deal. And it loses a little bit of luster being that it's this weekend. Lastly, just some thoughts on Bucks-Pacers Game 3. The injury report, as we talked about on yesterday's show, we didn't have it. It's out. Giannis is doubtful with the calf injury. So it doesn't sound like we're going to get Giannis Antetokounmpo for Game 3. Chris Middleton is questionable with an ankle sprain. He did not practice today. That's obviously a concern if they're not going to have Middleton. And it's really going to be bare bones Bucks. It's just kind of the story of the season. If Middleton doesn't play and it's just really Dame and Brooke and that's it, right? It's just we'll put Beasley back in and try to figure it out, or we'll put AJ Green in or Pat Connaughton and try to make it work. I think there is, you know, I don't want to just bank on, hey, you got to win Game 4, because I saw some people that were like, well, rest Chris and just play for Game 4. It's like, well, go down 2-1 and then that crowd's smelling blood in the water, right? And so I think that if Chris can go, let Chris go. If he can't go on Sunday because of it, I think that's okay as long as you win. If you don't win, then yeah, that's a problem. But I think we're just seeing, you know, consequence of an older Bucks team. And a lot of questions have been raised around John Horst and the you know, sort of roster put together. I saw someone be like, well, this is the roster that Giannis wanted. And it's like, well, kind of, right? Like, Giannis wanted Dame, yes, correct. Giannis probably wanted his buddy Chris back, yes, correct. I don't know if he was pining for Brooke. I don't know if he was making sure they kept Bobby, they kept Pat Connaughton. I mean, they might need a full fucking reset. And I don't think that you can just keep having guys around. At some point, you got to break some eggshells. And we're getting closer and closer to that. I'm not ready to talk about that situation, but I think with Middleton's injury, you at least have to bring it up. But yeah, we'll see where the Bucks go. And if they're practicing, they're planning to play without Middleton, and it's just going to be the Dame Lillard show. And I also wonder, is Dame Lillard cursed? Is Dame Lillard the one that's, you know, bringing the curse to it? But yeah, I think really in terms of just keys to Game 3, starting fast, I think, is a massive key. I think if you start fast and you take that crowd out of it early, like, you're set up for success, right? You don't let them get started. You let the crowd sort of, you know, go to a whisper. I also think the, you know, making sure that make things difficult on them in the paint. Do not let them get, you know, 50 points in the paint. I think a lot of what the Bucks, you know, were messing up on was correctable mistakes. So I think they can take advantage of those. I think also it's, you know, trying to slow it down as much as you can. Like, keep it slow and don't let the Pacers run and gun you out of the gym. But we'll see what happens. Long way to go. And we'll be back with you tomorrow to talk about that and talk about day two for the Green Bay Packers. And we'll also maybe talk a little Brewers at the end as well. All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one. We'll see you. Bye.